Blog Talk Radio.
Yes. Tonight is going to be one of those nights. But we're going to struggle through.
Hello?
Okay, we're all here.
Oh, you're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Well, hello, I'm Ruthanna Marte-Fio, and this is Gather Round. And Mercury was supposed to go direct on Sunday, but I have my doubts. So, anyway, hello, Blaine.
How are you?
I'm good, all things considered.
Fantastic.
So yeah, we've got you on, Raymond Blaine.
Yeah, this is Raymond Blaine on Palestine.
Right. So you just want to go ahead and start?
Sure. What's going on in Palestine is President Obama is visiting Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Ramallah and the West Bank. He got a really good pat on and great welcome in Israel, but not so much in the Palestinian areas. They're not very happy with him because he's done so little in the last 4 years. When he came out going to Cairo and having all these big promises, he never really delivered on any of those. It actually got way worse. So the Palestinians have a lot to say to him, and I imagine they'll be greeting him with a few shoes and things of that nature, because you know that's what they do. I don't blame them at all. You know, because of all the things that are going on, they're still. When this thing should be stopped. The other thing I'm going to talk about is the Russell Tribunal. And that was created, the first one I believe was in Vietnam when the Vietnam War was going on. And it just takes people to task for human rights violations. And there's one on Palestine. So we have the Russell Tribunal for Palestine, and they're looking to take their case to the International Criminal Court, which is a good sign for persecution and for apartheid. And if anybody wants to read that, I won't go into it, but it's online and you can read the whole thing, the whole manifestation and all that. Then today I'm also going to talk about the prisoners. There was a prisoner that just died in custody of torture a couple weeks ago, and I've got a small story about him from Massam. And then I also have a letter from a 16-year-old in Gaza named Ramin Sakwa. So, to further ado, here, go ahead and start reading a couple of these stories.
Yeah.
So this one's kind of short. This is from Ramin, and it kind of fits into the prisoner subject that I want to talk about. So anyway, Ramin Sakwa, he's 16 years old. He lives in Gaza.
Call him and do a conference call with him.
Okay. So he writes, "It may be an unusual thing in many places in the world, but for me here in Gaza, it's a very good thing to live well without bombing and hearing airplanes all over the skies of Gaza. Can't call it a regular way of life because we still face some problems here in Gaza. One of the very disturbing problems is electricity. For many years now, we have been facing electricity problems in Gaza due to the lack of fuel, which the electricity company faces due to the closing of the borders. During my week, I spend my days going to school, which I enjoy with friends and teachers. And during my weekend, I probably would go out with friends in certain places. Can't say that we don't have fear in our heart, because in any moment, another war might begin. Here in Gaza, a lot of families can never feel complete joy because of their lost ones. Children lose their sisters, brothers, and even their parents. Wars here do not differentiate between men, women, elders, and children. The Israeli rockets might attack anyone. A lot of people here in Gaza have a lot of the men and their family in Israeli prisons, which they can never visit. And a lot of prisoners went on a hunger strike because they're not even receiving the rights of any prisoners. Other people may be enjoying their lives, but deep inside they still feel sorry to all those children who have lost their families and all those mothers that wait for the day that their sons might come out of Israeli prisons. Although we try to be happy and enjoy our lives, we will never have full happiness unless we stop seeing these Palestinian families with their hearts full of sorrow over their family members that were killed during the war in 2008 and 2012, and that are being killed every day, not only in Gaza, but also all over Palestine. So So that was Ranim Sukwa. Hello?
Hello, hello.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so that was the first one. So this other one's about a man named Jarrat Arafat. Arafat Jarrat. He died in custody, and this is a little story about him, a little backstory on so it says the the issue of Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails is considered central to any progress in Palestinian-Israeli peace talks. They are systematically subjected to several kinds of torment, such as sleep deprivation, tight and prolonged handcuffing, intended humiliation, severe beatings, and medical neglect, which is all considered torture under international standards. According to Adamir Monthly Detention Report, conducted and published on the 1st of February 2013, 4,812 Palestinian political prisoners are in Israeli prisons and detention centers, including 178 administrative detainees, 12 women, and 219 children. Most of these Palestinians are detained on incomprehensible basis and remain in what is called administrative detention for many years without being officially charged. Rory McCarthy of The Guardian's Jerusalem correspondent estimated that one-fifth of the population has at one time been in prison since 1967. Once handcuffed and blindfolded, Palestinian detainees are not usually told the reason why they are arrested. Neither them nor their families know where they are going to be imprisoned. They are kept awaiting long periods of time on the floor of Israeli jeeps with their bodies twisting in painful positions resulting from stiff tying and cramped confinement. After that, they are transferred to interrogation centers to be thoroughly questioned, which mainly takes the forms of severe beatings, inhumane insults, threats, premeditated degradation. They are most often put in solitary confinement, and that's basically, they say that's to soften them up and make them want to talk. They are denied the simplest trial rights and protection measures during the interrogations. Here are some of the violations included in the report by the Prisoner Support for Human Rights Association. One, a Palestinian facing charges in the military courts can be held in custody for 8 days before being brought before a judge. An Israeli citizen, however, can be held in custody for only a maximum of 24 hours before being brought before a judge. A Palestinian can be held without charge by the order of a military judge for an initial period of up to 90 days. This period can be extended for another period of up to 90 days by request of the Chief Area Legal Advisor for the Occupied Territories via an order from the Military Court of Appeals. In total, a Palestinian can be held for the purpose of interrogation for 180 days. By comparison, an Israeli citizen can be held without indictment for an initial period of 30 days, which can be extended 3 times in 15-day increments on the authority of the Attorney General. Number 3, a Palestinian detainee can be held for up to 90 days without access to a lawyer. By comparison, Israeli civil courts, a detainee charged with a security offense can be prevented from consulting an attorney for 21 days. One very recent case of a Palestinian being killed during interrogation was 30-year-old Arafat Jarrat from a small village near Hebron called Seir. He was arrested only a few days ago and died during investigations, according to the Minister of Detainees Affairs, Issa Kwak. An autopsy of his body revealed that he had been subjected to extreme torture, resulting in his loss of life. The information we have received so far is shocking and painful. The evidence corroborates our suspicion that Mr. Jarrat died as a result of torture, especially since the autopsy clearly proved the victim's heart. And the reason they say that is because Israel said he died of a heart attack.
Right.
And most of his injuries were caused by them trying to revive him, but it appears that that's not the case.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, so then the story of him is really sad. It says Israel's Shin Bet Internal Intelligence Service said that Jarrat was held on Monday due to his involvement in stone throwing an incident in November 2012, during which an Israeli was injured. This is not the first incident of its sort, as many Palestinians were snatched from their families and held away for many years with regular harassment, leaving them with permanent psychological and physical defects. Reasons are as small as participating in peaceful demonstrations against occupational acts of human rights violations and as huge as stone throwing on armored vehicles, which may cost a Palestinian his life if the stone happens to scratch the helmet of an Israeli soldier. This is what happened to Jarrat. His wife was interviewed and said, Jarrat is a father of two and his wife is 5 months pregnant. She narrated with tears what happened that day as he was arrested. while the crying of his little ones was clearly heard in the background, adding another horrifying chapter to this tragedy. She told El Quds that at the beginning, Israeli soldiers refused to let him say goodbye to his children and wife, but then retreated and finally let him do so, cynically saying that you might never see them again. Only a couple of days before he was arrested, he and his family had celebrated the second birthday of his son, his wife added. Please take care of my children, was a thing he said to his wife before he was gone, this time forever. So people, come on now, you know, this is getting old. People are dying, people are getting tortured, and it's for security reasons. I'm just not buying that.
I think not. I'm sure that you were like me and many of the activists. As soon as we heard that he died from a heart attack, we knew better. Just in our hearts, we knew.
And well, right, and they did an autopsy with other people involved, which was good. So it's,
yeah.
But that hardly ever happens. I mean, this guy is just one of the people that have died this way that actually got some press. There's hundreds of people over the years that have died this way, and nobody hears anything about them.
Absolutely nothing. No.
And so this isn't an isolated incident. This is something that happens regularly every single day.
Yeah. So it's not isolated. It's I was surprised that they actually did have an autopsy that wasn't skewed.
It was still skewed. It was just happened to be the Palestinians got involved, so that was good.
Right. Yeah, because they're saying that it's still a heart attack, but we know what caused the heart attack if there was one. And they sure didn't try to revive him from any of their torture.
When he left, he was a 30-year-old healthy male individual from Palestine, and when he came back a bruised, broken mess and dead. In anywhere in the world, that's a war crime, period.
Mm-hmm. Except Israel does it. It doesn't matter. Nobody does anything.
But as I say each time, things are changing. The Russell Tribunal has been investigating since 2009 and has compiled a lot of information. But they were not able to take it to the International Criminal Court until now because Palestine has just become a member state. So they're only some type of member state like the Vatican, but they are now granted the authority to go to the International Criminal Court. And I'm praying that this happens soon.
But
it looks like it is.
Several countries have been bullying them not to.
Sure. Well, they do bully them with aid money.
Yes,
they take away their aid money.
Yeah. That's
so,
true.
You know, anybody that thinks that we're not buying off countries is completely wrong.
Oh, for sure. And I don't know. I don't know how you feel about Abbas in the West Bank. You know, a lot of people just consider him a traitor to the Palestinians. And he does seem like he's more than willing to compromise in kowtow.
Well, the problem is that Abbas has his hands tied. I wouldn't want to be in his position.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a hard time really saying much bad about him because I think down deep in his heart he really does care.
Well, I think he does too.
And if he makes noise, then he'll have the same fate as Yasser Arafat. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
Israel silences critics, period. You know?
Yes. I don't know. But I don't think that he's a bad man either. But No,
I think he's caught up in an unwinnable situation. No matter what he does, he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate because if he does one thing, then he makes the Israelis and the Americans mad, then they punish him by taking away their funding, which they've already done, and now it's even worse than it was. And then if he cows down to the Israelis and the Americans, then his own people really have a hard time with that. So he's really stuck in a really bad position, and I commend him for even sticking it out. I mean, he's tried to step down a couple of times, and they won't let him. So there you go.
Well, we can still talk a bit more. I'm not the only one with communication problems. Sarit Jacobson was planning on interviewing Guy Boutavia from Israel, who is a pro-Palestinian activist, and but there's a communication problem. I'm not sure if they're trying to use Skype or the phone, because I know they talk on the phone. But anyway, we don't have them here. So
all right. Well, I can kind of give you a little background about what the Russell Tribunal is trying to accomplish at the criminal court.
Yeah, that would be good.
The proceedings, they're basically have proved that Israel is an apartheid regime. They've also proven that the Palestinians are being persecuted unfairly, which anybody that knows anything about Palestine knows that already. This isn't earth-shattering news, but at the same time, at least somebody's put it on paper.
Yeah.
And so now it's hopefully going to the criminal court very, very, very soon. So
I hope so. I hope that they don't give in. Did you see recently where one of the pastors who is really on his deathbed, what, 240 some days on a fast, they exiled him to Gaza?
Yeah, that happens quite frequently with prisoners as they move them out of the area because they don't want the publicity of him coming home and then causing an upheaval in the West Bank because they're really big on not having something blow up in their face. But it's against international law, again. It's against international law for an occupying power to transfer people from their area to other areas of occupied territory. It's illegal. But they do it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So this Russell Tribunal is trying to accomplish this by going
it
to
sounds,
the
and Sarita's joined us now, but it sounds as if the Russell Tribunal is actually trying to get the like the International Human Rights Declaration or something put in place a little bit more or
thank you.
Something.
Is that the Russell Tribunal, there's the nice thing about it is there's no vetoes, so they can go after the United States for complacency. And they're also going after the companies that supply the occupation with bulldozers and with tactical equipment and all the different people that are profiting from the occupation. It's actually going to come back on them. So that's the other nice thing about the Russell Tribunal. Nobody's left in the lurch. I mean, they're going after everyone, not just Israel. And you don't have to be a signee to the International Criminal Court to be prosecuted. So that's the other nice thing, too. It can't be vetoed.
So the United States can't get their 2 cents worth in. Did you get Guy, or are we doing without
yes,
Guy?
Yes, we have Guy Boutavia with us as well.
Wonderful. I'm going to go ahead and finish up here. Thank you so much for having me on again. This is Raymond Blaine on Palestine. And everybody have a great night.
Okay, happy spring.
Yeah, happy spring to you too. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, Sari, you and Guy, take it away then.
Is Guy there too?
Yeah.
Great. So, Guy, what would you like to tell us about what you're doing what is your main project, and what is really happening in the territories? Because you are there a lot, so it'd be interesting to hear what you're seeing there to people who have never been there.
Yeah, my main project is with a group that called Tayush. We are Israelis and Palestinians and foreigners and we are on the ground, mostly in South Hebron Hills, but not only. And our goal is to accompany people, mostly farmers, shepherds, whatever, to the land, because most of the problem, I don't know if people know, but there is a battle on land. Israel is trying to take as much land as it can and to expel Palestinians from their land, to clear the land from Palestinians. And this is a battle that we are facing every day, and we are trying to fight it back and to be with people and to provide as much help as we can that they're going to stay on the land. So this is my real the most important thing that I think we can do, and from that we are trying to also spread what we are facing and what we are documenting each time when we are on the ground, what is happening to people, to mostly abroad, not in Israel, because it's a lost battle here, I think.
So you think if there's any change, it will have to come from the United States?
I'm not sure if...
Or the world?
I think mostly the world, maybe more from Europe, or because I think the United States, it's too much... Israel, they have it on its pocket. I mean, with AIPAC and with all the support, it's like they can do whatever they like and not really any limitation for red lines for what they are doing.
Yes, there's United States sure needs a big wake up somehow.
I've been with contact with people from the United States, from diplomats, and they know what is happening, and for some reason, I don't know why, maybe it's the Jewish voice that is so powerful. Maybe they, I don't know why, but they do not do enough.
Here in the South, people tell me, oh, Israel is God's chosen people, so
sorry.
So we must support them. I almost cry.
We are hearing it almost every day that the land is from God and the Jews are the chosen and whatever. Those reasons we are facing them and hearing them every day. But I suppose you could have accepted that the United States should know that people are people and by its history that. There is no one that is chosen and better than anyone else. And
yes, and many are waking up. I'm so awake because many Americans have woke me up.
Americans woke you up?
Yes. I've been around the good ones.
Yeah, there are good ones everywhere, but... the majority is not acting as much as it should, and the governments are not acting as they should. I mean, in Europe, it's much better. They are sometimes they are saying no, and they do not accept everything from Israel. But United States is way back. I don't know, but it doesn't act like Europe, like...
Yeah, the American people have no idea what's going on in Israel. That's true.
Yeah.
That's why I try to talk about it, yeah.
And it's real disaster. It's real disaster. And people do not know but the facts, but Israel is already took most of the land of the West Bank, and he's taking more and more, and it's got
and all in the name of racism, right?
They use many systems and many system of law and many tactics and they use as much effort as they can. And they do it not in one way. They do it in several ways, and they have the settlers, and they have the civil administration, and they have the army, and all those units are acting in one mission to take more and more land, and it seems like it's it's not coordinating between the units, but they are coordinating, and it's very hard to act against it, because it's like a very good machine, and it's working.
It's working.
Yeah.
Very quietly too. Sneaky.
And they have law for everything, and almost everything is by law, and they have reasons, and they have the security reason, and they have they are demolishing every structure on the ground, even wells and cistern and whatever, and when you're asking why, they say, they didn't get the permission, they didn't get the permit. Of course, but they can they get a permit? No, they can't.
No.
So it's by the law, and we know what happened the past with law. I mean, all my family, my grandfather's family, killed in the Holocaust, and it was all by law.
Oh yeah.
So can it help them? No. So this is the situation.
Very, very bad.
Yeah. Very, very bad. Very frustrating.
I find the attitude of the people one of the most alarming things. When we try to talk to people who are not exactly like-minded in this subject, it's the misinformation out there is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
Especially among Israelis, it's even worse than among Americans.
Yeah, because you got the brainwash, and they have to feed it, and with all sorts of lies and disinformation.
Oh yeah.
And when you are on the ground, you say, what they are talking about? I mean, there is hardly violence. All those security reasons are not on the ground. If there is problem of security, is from the settlers or the occupation forces themselves that are destroying things, acting even not according to the Israeli law or even not according to the legal advice of the army or whatever. And it's like the Wild West. They can do whatever they like.
And have you been threatened?
Me? Of course. I was beaten by settlers, by occupation forces. We are facing threats every day, yeah. And when we are on the ground, they are keeping an eye on us every single moment. And they are trying to put us on us every case that they can. Sometimes they telling that we are beating them, we are cursed them, whatever.
Oh.
And
they did that to a South cancer.
Yeah. It's not. But. I guess my group it's different from others that we are documenting everything. And everything is we have many cameras with us, and everything is documenting. And me myself, I had the few times that they're accusing me of a lot of bad things. And fortunately, I had documentation that it was false, and you can see it. But if I wouldn't have it, I guess I would be in jail now.
Wow, That's four hard.
Things that I never done.
That's terrible.
And it's I mean for the Palestinian, I guess most of the people that are in the jail are for things that they
did not
do. Yeah, and what they can do. I mean, you have the policemen or settlers or whatever that saying you did something. They have no documentation, and the court is a military court. Do they have any chance there? No.
Totally no chance.
Yeah. So this is the situation. Yeah, and many times that they are beaten or been attacked by settlers, and they come to file complaint, they find themselves accused, and it's happened many times. And they came to the police to find support, to find somebody to help them, and they find themselves in jail. And it's you cannot believe it until you see it.
Yes.
And it's happened daily.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Guy is one of the real heroes.
He is, isn't he?
He is.
We're proud of you, Guy.
Very, very.
You're very courageous.
No, actually, I'm a very frightened person, and sometimes I do things and I find myself in situation I can't believe I'm really am, because it's very, very frightening, and it but somehow when you need to you find power, and you find in yourself something that you wouldn't believe it really is. Or I don't know. I can
right,
tell
the strength
that
is there, and you find strength that you didn't know you had. Obviously,
yeah.
This is what's happening.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We thank you so much, and you're an inspiration, because when we just get discouraged when people call us names and say all kinds of stuff. And then there's someone like you that we can look to and say, well, you're taking physical beatings, you know, you're threatened all the time, and you keep doing it. So I just want to thank
I do not feel I have a choice. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I have to be there. I do not have a choice.
Yeah.
That's what I'm feeling. Yeah.
Well,
very
we should
hard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to have to let you go. And
okay.
Cerise is going to stay around, and we're going to talk about balance.
Okay.
Yeah. But we hope that you come back and talk with us again.
I would love to. In the meantime, you can watch many videos on my channel, YouTube channel if you want, or see Tayush pages on Facebook. We're trying to spread and put out many things that we'll see on the ground.
Okay, we'll have three can send that to us. We'll put it on our page on the Era Marte Pio page on Facebook, and then we'll start getting it out and about to a guy. So
okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, Tariq. He is one of the heroes.
Yeah.
That's,
he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, but that's what really makes a hero, because he says he's not all that courageous. And sometimes he finds himself in the middle of something that's like, how did I get here? But he says he has no choice. And see,
absolutely no choice, especially the ones who...
Yeah, that's the thing.
Have terrible family histories and know what fascism, how far it can go.
Well, we have something that's a little rough here because we didn't know what we were doing, but it's about 5 minutes. Omo Babaya, he's a Nigerian student who is in Cyprus right now,
And he has a little bit of a report from Africa for us. And then you...
Hi, everyone. Thanks for staying tuned on Air Amatetu. Today, we're starting a new program titled The World in Your Teeth. I'm your uncle, and my name is Omo Abiy. The World in Your Teeth is a cultural program aimed in promoting cultural value in our society. Each week, you get to learn about other people's culture, the things they do, the food they eat, and the life they live. Every week, I'll be bringing to your living room events and news happening around the world. Our aim and vision is to educate you, our listener out there, about other people's culture, and also to promote and encourage cohesiveness among our people. It is very important to hear the truth before you make the move. In a world where cultural values and laws are changing almost every day, I will endeavor to keep you abreast of events taking place around the world. Stay tuned, I'll be right back. Welcome back. Today I'll be telling you a short story about Edo State. Edo State is located in southwest of Nigeria and the capital is called Benin City. First, let's listen to the latest news in Nigeria. Headline news. FG suspend Dana Air license again. U.S. consider visa restriction for some sub-government officials in Nigeria. Now the news in detail. The Nigerian federal government has suspended again the operating license of Dana Airline Services, pending the resolution of a certain safety issue. If you recall, Dana Airline plane Boeing MD-83 crashed in Lagos, killing 163 people 7 months ago. Also in the news this week, United States is considering visa restriction for some of the top government officials in Nigeria following the recent presidential pardon granted to former governor of Bayelsa State, Chief Defrie Alamisia. Chief Alamisia was convicted for fraud and money laundering while serving as the executive governor of Bayelsa State. Let's quickly continue with our program. It's nice to know you see out there listening to us on Air Amatetu. Like I said earlier on, I'll be telling you a short story about Edo State. The people of Edo State are called the Benins, and they are rich in history dated back before the colonial era. The Benins are well talented in art and crafts. Some of the historical sites in Benin is the Oba Palace, which was named as a UNESCO Heritage Site in 1999. Also, some of the other historical sites in Benin that tourists troop to every year is the Asolo statue in the Heart of Benin, and also Chief Ogiame's house, which is one of the oldest houses in Benin City. I'm going to tell you quickly the kind of food the Benins like to eat, I mean the traditional meal. The Benins, they like to eat pounded yam, eba, eating with vegetable, melon or okra soup. This vegetable, melon or okra soup is mostly cooked with bush meat like antelope, pigs, grass cutter, beef or fish. I tell you, it is very delicious. The people of Benin are also blessed with good cultural dances, which I'll be telling you in our future program. For further inquiries or details, you can email me omo_airamatetu@yahoo.com. Omo is spelled like omo_amatetu is spelled as airamatetu@yahoo.com. omo_airamatetu@yahoo.com. I promise I'm going to respond to your emails and inquiries promptly. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being part of our first audition of today's program, The World in Your Teeth. My name is Omo Abiye. I assure you next week I'm going to give you a well-blended program that will encourage, that will move you, that will make you feel better. Please always remember, you are not a loser until you quit. Until I see you again next time next week, stay blessed, don't give up. Bye.
Well, thank you, Omo. Hello, Gwen.
Hi there.
Gwen Holden Berry is here from daughtersofisis.org and Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio. And Sarit was hanging around, but she isn't here right now, I see. Gwen, you know, Mercury was supposed to go direct. And
it did. It actually did. I think we have to remember these days that, you know, we're in a whole new territory after the 21st solstice, you know, last year.
Yeah.
We're in a completely new territory. So it's and also I've read several hello.
No, I'm calling you, Sarit. Go ahead.
Okay. Several healers and channelers have been talking about how this equinox is a breakthrough point.
What kind of a point?
It's a breakthrough point towards shifting of consciousness that we've been working so hard to get to. So I think the grandmother Sky said it very well, Barbara Clow, when she said, between now and 2015, we should be very careful of our thoughts, because our thoughts are liable to manifest right around the corner. I think we see that when we get our communication screwed up, because we're used to the old ways. You know, we have to become, you know, adept at the new ones.
Flexible. Yoga, you know, it's yoga of the mind, the flexibility. It's a great time.
It is. It's also very challenging.
Yeah. It's I can't even imagine, you know, what's to come, because except good things, because this is good, and it's lots of growth going on. And that's why I wanted to have you here, because you're one of the busiest people I know. You're involved in so many things. And because you have your own business, you're an activist, you're getting a lot more going online as far as communication-wise. And
well, back at you there. Right back at you.
Well, try.
Today is a day of balance. It's all about balancing. I think it's about balancing with our Earth Mother, but our Earth Mother is also showing us that if we balance, it's like birch, you know, the temple of the tree of birch.
Yeah.
Birch is one of those fantastic entryways into Mother Nature's kingdom that talks to us about keeping things balanced, you know. Right now, we're being challenged to blend, if you will, like you said to me earlier, so many different things, because it's no longer just about one thing or another thing. It's about following your fascination or your bliss and expressing yourself completely. And perhaps that's why communications are a little strange. We're getting used to the opportunity being provided to us right now by all of the different cosmic shifting of energies, and boy, there's a lot of it going on, you know. And also right now we're being goaded into action, where we've been in a dreamy state and a very psychic sort of state for the last month. Now we're being goaded into action with Mars and Aries, you know?
Oh, it's interesting, because I used to think, well, you know, balance. In fact, some rituals we've done for the spring or fall equinox would be, you know, calling back and forth the black, white, hot, cold, you know, all of this. We think of the opposites, the yin-yang. And then, you know, some people seem to try to have a very balanced, they sleep 8 hours, they work 8 hours, and then there's 8 hours for whatever, but the whatever includes going to work and meals and, you know, that kind of
But I don't really, that might have worked in the past for some people, but for us, that's not where it's at. And I found something that I just thought this was wonderful. It says, Daniel Botkin in Discord and Harmonies, he challenged the view that nature ideally exists in a state of perfect balance, remaining constant mm-hmm. over time, unless disturbed by human influences. He says now, he argues that nature has no ideal state of balance, as constantly evolving and fluctuating. And that's the way I feel we are. I mean, we're evolving. We're not stuck
yeah.
at. So for us, balance is going to be changing all the time, too. And,
yeah.
You know, what's balance for you and I? Well, it's not even the same, but us and some other people, we wouldn't even recognize that as balance because it's so different from the way we're living. But, you know, still there's a sense that, well, this is the balance for me. Maybe it's 70% this, 30 this, or 70 of this, 20 of that, and 10. How do you try to figure, like with your business, your activism, your...
You know what? I just get up and dive in.
And do it.
I really do. I really do try to follow my bliss. I use common sense. I attend to matters that are needful, or if I can't attend to them because sometimes our hands are tied financially or what have you, then I work as the practitioner following my bliss and letting the energy flow back to me so I am enabled to do it.
I think that's a good, right, because that's part of being your authentic self. And we're fortunate if we want to, you know, stay up till 4 in the morning working on the project.
Yeah.
And then if we want to get up at 5:30 or 6 and get back on it.
It's true. It's really quite true. And I think that it's a matter of choosing. For many people are, the majority of people, I think, though, are extraordinarily glad to have a job that they can feel good about and go and attend regular hours. Obviously, humanity likes that kind of community effort. And then there are those of us who are more blossom more on the side, doing what we do as the entrepreneur, or you know, and creating actually more environment for jobs. Did that come out right? I hope
yeah,
it did.
It did.
I was reading the fabulous Wild Hunt blog that is kept up by what's his name? Oh, Lord, please let me find his name because he does such a fabulous job. Jason Pritzi Waters. He does a beautiful job, the Wild Hunt. Every pagan probably knows it. And he posted today a bunch of quotes on the equinox from the people of our community. And I liked what T.O. Bishop said, the Solitary Druid Fellowship's Equinox devotional he was talking about. He said, and I quote, "Here, in this moment of balance, I honor and recognize the sacred mystery of existence. I am part of a cosmic dance. A holy and blessed music fills the world. The light and the darkness shifts from the moment, this moment onward. As it is on the land, so it is in my being. I follow the movement of the mother, and she works a transformation in me. Be it new beginnings or resolution, the equinox is a point of transition, of change. I embrace the change."
Mm.
And boy, is that on the money right now, especially in our lives. I think the whole cycle of our lives could probably be put right there. It's Aquarius.
Ah, the dawning, right?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I mean, sometimes, I don't know what it is, but since, you've heard me talk especially since December, but the whole past year has been, you know, you felt it, the whole change. But since December, I sometimes just get that shit-eating grin on my face, and I... you know, for no apparent reason.
But I just feel great. And I feel like, yeah, you know, my authentic self, true north, following my bliss, it's all here. Yes.
It's like you're saying, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah. And that's the way I feel. So, the spring, well, like you said, this spring is, this equinox is a little more major than some others we've had. And I see. Go ahead.
It really does seem to be. I heard it said by Denise LaFay that we're in the first trimester of the pregnancy of the new age being born.
Okay. So it's been, you know, it's been coming. There's been so many starts for the last, how long? Did, the harmonic convergence.
87.
87. Okay, that was something.
It shifted a lot of people. What?
Yeah, and that it shifted people who one wouldn't think would have been.
It opened up the frontier. A bunch of new teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Came onto the okay. and there was an explosion of information with especially one of my faves, Terrence McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the people I think that carries the baton from McKenna is two of my favorites, actually, Rupert Sheldrake and Graham Hancock. Hancock's been working with the ayahuasca plant to help open himself up more, and if anybody is familiar with Graham Hancock, he is responsible for bringing us so much information, the footprints of the gods, you know, Heaven's Mirror. This is a fellow who has done some extraordinary rediscovering of the old world in the here and now and brought a lot of the mysteries to light.
Well, so, okay, now that was what sort of brought him to the forefront or got him going. And since then, there's been a lot of people, like you said, who have come on the scene as teachers, gurus, whatever you want to call them. And you have a couple. Barbara Klaus is one that you really admire a lot.
I feel as though Barbara Klaus has mentored me through my journey since I realized I had a path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 32 years old when I discovered I could walk down this road. Of course, most of my life I studied the esoterica and the arts and, you know, the fascination, especially with history and the exotic, and spirituality.
Yeah.
However, my sister and I opened Daughters of Isis in Pompano, and it was the Baron Company books that really guided me in the beginning of my serious creation. And that was her and her husband. And she was friend and co-creator with Terrence McKenna and so many others. She published the book that brought harmonic convergence to the public with Jose Arquez, the Maya, bringing all of an Earth Ascending. And she was one of the people in Chichen Itza on harmonic convergence, along with several others like Brian Sween and, oh my goodness, just so many. And these elders, because there are elders now, are real elders. I mean, Mrs. Clow is the grandmother Sky is what she's called, and she's 71 now, which isn't that old to say anymore. But you know, when she began all of this, she was in her late 30s, early 40s when she began putting so much out there,
mm-hmm.
and we've lost teachers. Too, you know, like we lost Ed Andrews, and we lost Jose Arquez. last year before and last year. And it's sort of shocking because these folks have shepherded us in. And now we realize that there are so many of us that they were preparing the way for us to be the teachers right now. And we are.
Yeah.
We're bringing it to a far vaster community.
Yeah. It's not nice to look back and say, wow, you know, the lineage is a...
It is, isn't it? There is a lineage there.
Yes, yes. And I know I'd have to say that a couple who really influenced me was Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, yeah.
Books, and it was like, wow, okay, that's what this is about. And then Starhawk, who was...
Oh, yeah.
First... Well, her first book was one of the first I really read when I got into this.
Me too.
My teacher was Phaedra Bonowitz and Althea Orr, and that was a book that they were very, very into, and it was called Spiral Dance.
Right. Miriam broke ground right there with it, and she's still doing it. She just addressed Harvard Divinity School on permaculture.
I know. She's fantastic. I just met her for one weekend years ago at a workshop in Chicago that she put on, and it was a 2-day thing, and she was fantastic. In the first book and in all her others, she's mentioned the civil acts of disobedience that she's been involved in. She's been jailed more times than... Well,
she's like us, we're like her.
but I think that it was very sort of a watershed thing for me, you know, reading this book by an obviously very spiritual woman, and who, you know, talked about, she had lots of stories and rituals, and nothing was ever set in stone. It was, you know, this whole evolving thing. And from the heart and this kind of thing. And then her books are filled with the political acts. And it was like, wow, okay, you know, this is somebody who's really practicing what she's preaching. She's walking her talk. So what that did, though, it's always made me be a little, I admit it, disdainful of people on the pagan or spiritual path who supposedly, you know, are doing whatever, and yet they don't seem to give a flying fuck about what's going on in the world, which to me...
They're lazy.
They're lazy, they're in denial, it's all...
It does us no good to debate over it. Mm-mm. People are either going to get it or they're not. We are turning and embracing the community. What our teachers, what those who came before us and who are still walking out ahead of us, in front of us, are saying is, look, it's your job now to turn to everyone in your community, whether they're Christian, Buddhist, Seventh-day Adventist. It's about your community, because your community needs to be sustainable. And you, as the pagan, have an intimate connection with the roots of that. And so what's your responsibility to the people in your community? Who do you call family? Do you call humanity family, or do you isolate yourself? And in isolation, we don't evolve. We aren't being real pagans. We are not expressing what has always been there, the joy and the triumph of Mother Earth.
Right, and celebrating the diversity. And I don't mean with plants and animals, although, of course, plants and animals, but the diversity of people and cultures, everything. And, to me, that's part of
I think pagans should be the number one example at this time and provide the standard for all the other philosophies to gather around. I think that we, and I mean in the pagan tradition, I also include all of us who are, we're not religiously aligned, we're spiritually anchored.
Right. Yes.
And I would say that goes for people who are quasi-yoga practicing Buddhists, come urban shaman. You know, it's all there. But we are part of a community that embraces spirit and is turning to the rest of the community and saying, no matter what you honor as the higher power, this is, you know, your home, your earth, and your family is humanity, and that's the standard we should really, because that is who we are.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I have to say, I have quite a few friends who are atheists and agnostics, and they put some pagans to shame as far as their for the earth. For the planet, for people, they're fantastic. It's like, okay, well, I'm learning a lot from them. So this time that we're coming into, or that we're in, it's breaking down all kinds of barriers, like, you know, things that I had thought maybe before about, well, atheists and agnostics, I mean, you know, they're so different from me. How could I ever really, you know, have anything in common with somebody like that? And it's like, wow, turns out I've got a heck of a lot in common with them. So.
Well, and there's so many wonderful people out there that hold the traditional standards. Like, I remember just last month seeing the lady in Salem, Laurie Kelly, turned 80. I mean, my goodness. What, you know, hey, listen, she's an elder.
Yes.
And she deserves every bit of respect for all that she has anchored and established. And she is a traditionalist, you know. And from her, we can see and we can touch stone with what those traditions and values anchored from the past are all about. Did I put that well? Did I put that succinctly?
Yeah. That was the
And I hope respectfully too. There are so many folks out there who are doing, and you know, you talked about Isaac Bonowitz, and wow, he's another one shockingly crossed. But he's still here. And all of the wonderful work he did. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, embracing others in all of the different walks. And let's face it, I think what we're witnessing right now on this planet is a fusion of culture. And I think that the strongest chords of that fusion, if it were a vibration, are coming from those who would reach with the spiritual, you know, nature. And a lot of my anthropologist friends are like giving me real grief about this, when culture is unique and it needs to be. And I'm saying, well, we are witnessing the birth of a global culture. Just take a look at the signs.
Yes. It's just such an exciting time to be alive.
It is. It really is. There's a lot of good stuff going on. There's a lot of spooky stuff going on, too. I mean, look how much we can see now. And that's another thing that's happening. The veil between the dimensions or the world is cracking big time. And we have the tools, too, as I was saying before. I mean, Graham Hancock is out there, to a certain degree, advocating the responsible use of the very big door opener between the worlds of, you know, hallucinogens, the ayahuasca. And doctors are embracing it as the cure for severe addiction and other maladies of the mind and behavior. I myself am creating ayahuasca in a homeopathic application, to gently, so those folks who wish to gently open those doors with their own conscious awareness, more in the reins of it, you know, so it's available to them. But the plants, they show the way to us. Nature shows us the way forward.
Mm-hmm. And that's and that there again, now we could talk about balance with that, because we know that, well, maybe too much might be too much for somebody. It might not for another person. People have to find their own right balance in doing this.
It's true.
For some people, you know, just a little bit's going to go a long ways. And so
some people just really are not prepared for what a concoction, what a plant medicine like ayahuasca, or there's several. There's peyote, the peyote dances of the Native Americans. It's a sacred herb because it takes you on the journey into yourself.
Yeah.
And it's huge. Now, during the 60s, there was a huge cultural explosion because of the plant allies that happened. That's my point of view of it, but I think you'll find historically it sort of lines. Right now, it's becoming a handy tool within the spiritual community. I mean, do you know how many ayahuasca weekends are planned? But my God, it's become a sidebar in hip comedy movies now with Alan Alda. You know, I mean, the hippie commune with the aging hippie Alan Alda having his ayahuasca Saturday evening, you know. The point is, though, that not everybody, as you say, not everybody is ready to have that door slammed open.
Right.
And it can be very dangerous. That's why in shamanism, you apprentice and you're taught by, you know, in specific indigenous cultures. I mean, this is, now I'm talking about my own training. You know, it's like 6 weeks you learn how to control your mind before you enter that, you know, it's like Luke Skywalker, you know, only what you take with you into that cave. And boy, you got a load of crap coming in with you. You've also got worlds of beauty to explore. However, preparation is everything. And folks who go away for an ayahuasca weekend hit and miss on that. And it can be very dangerous.
Right, because, I mean, somebody can't set you down and talk to you for an hour and you shouldn't feel that you're totally ready for anything.
No, well, that's why I'm working with it in the flower essence, in the homeopathic version.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's equally as effective. It requires fastidiousness and use like flower essences always do.
Mm-hmm.
But it gently peels back the layers of the onion for you. And it'll, I think, work with folks on a more, perhaps even in the long run, a more lasting
It may be more lasting because it is gentle and maybe creeps up on you. Gwen is from daughtersofisis.org. I mean, not just from, but her company is daughtersofisis.org.
That's .com, not org.
I'm sorry, it's com. Something was org, yeah, maybe before. Okay, you're .com. Yes, okay.
I am.
Yeah. You are .com. But, no, I think sometimes, like everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people want that intense, you know, just blow your brains out kind of thing. But for everybody, that might not be the way, and it may not be as long-lasting as a gentle approach, at least at the beginning.
No, I mean, I have to say, when I was in my, you know, late teens and going into college and experimenting with some, and I only dropped acid once, but I worked with, you know, some of the natural hallucinogens. And, you know, the experiences are still colorfully vivid in my memory to a certain degree, but they were not what they could have been had I apprenticed and journeyed with a shaman before that, you know?
I was
under that bed talking to that flying turtle from the Japanese movies was not, you know, anything that really gave me a view on the cosmos. It was fun while it happened. And then I followed my fascination. I was taught by someone who knew what they were doing within the traditions that they grew up in and were taught by. And there are wonderful, wonderful healers, mentors out there who, and shaman and medicine people who will, you know, what is the saying, Ra? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Oh, for sure.
And that does happen, I think. Even if the teacher is a book that comes down off the shelf.
Oh, sure.
Or... you see that plant on the, you know, in the nursery, and you want to plant it and use it, or you have to go find the seeds. And in this country now, more and more, you can get minor, you know, plant medicine, so like marijuana, and legally. Hopefully,
yeah.
We'll get it so that it's all legal.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely for legalize it all. I just think that we would have less problems. But I never did peyote, but that's what I want to do.
It's an extraordinary experience. I think that what it does for your vision, especially, you know, tactically, your vision.
Mm-hmm.
The visionary experience of it is, you know, it's not just trails. It's really cool. But I got incredibly sick, but I was meant to.
Well,
I knew. I was warned.
Well,
you know,
exactly. That's what I've heard. It's like you're going to be so sick. And I don't like to throw up.
It happens to you with the ayahuasca, too. If you take it in the correct strength, it'll give you, like peyote, you not only throw it up, but you also, it gives you diarrhea. But believe me, by the time this stuff kicks in, this is the least of your, you know, concerns,
right.
Because you have stepped, you really do step between the veils.
Yeah. Well,
and
that's a different way. I've been there, but not the same. But I guess. I want to experience that. But we'll see.
Hey, you know, more than ever nowadays. We were just talking about that at the beginning of the conversation tonight. What we ask for is brought to us. And that's one of the things that, you know, this manifestation thing is brand new out the gate, you know. if we understand feeling, and I'm not talking about emotions run rampant, I'm talking about that feeling, you know, that old zing. Does that make better sense?
Yeah, the old zing, okay, yeah.
when we can capture and call on that old zing, you know, you just feel fabulous.
Okay.
And you think, wow, you're feeling fabulous, goodness, this is what I can see happening. Well, there you go, babe, that's the major manifestor, or as Abraham Hicks says, you're in the vortex.
I love Abraham.
yeah. Abraham is doing a really good job right now, and so is Bashir. You don't hear much from the old warrior fellow, though, Jay-Z Knight's guy.
Did you say Ramsa?
Ramsa has been kind of quiet in the back shadows lately, but as far as I can tell.
He's probably resting. We'll hear something. But no, Abraham Hicks I just laugh, and because he's so spot on, And we call him he, even though he is
it's
a collective.
They, yeah, it's they. It's,
but
and,
yes,
and you know, it's crazy because Jerry Hicks crossed over a few months ago.
I know, yeah.
And if anybody pays attention, I do. I fully intend to be able to sit and listen to Abraham with Esther Hicks, because she does come to South Florida, to Boca Raton and such. So
oh,
the opportunity's there.
Yeah. Yes, please. Yeah. Do. Yeah.
I fully intend to. You know, even just the videos on YouTube and whatnot, just wonderful stuff. I mean,
it's
so guiding. And the other thing about it is, too, we're talking about balance. Balance is incredibly, and it's a day like today that we can tap in to the essential feel of balance, because as you and I are working on this wonderful project to create a network for folks to join and bring their voices. right now, it's about, you know, you're not hearing the truth through the news networks as they are. And so folks are reaching to inform one another through blogs and the internet. We all know this. We're working on a project right now where we can bring more voices together and also establish some help and assistance for people looking to create video blogs or radio shows like ours or whatever, you know, to mentor, to shepherd people to find their voice and to bring more of a consensus of voices out there. And one of the things I think is really important right now that we are faced with is truth now is something you have to feel through your heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get the truth, because 2 and 2 makes 4. You do the due diligence. You check for all the information. But 2 and 2 makes 4, and then 2 and 2 makes 820 someplace else. You know, you do have to use, and the only way to, I think, anymore really hear and know the truth is to filter it through your heart.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But yeah, we're working on this project, and it's collaboration. It's all about collaboration and cooperation.
It is. Cooperation.
And well, that's balance, because we have people from different walks of life, but we all have the same goal to help others and get the word out.
And very different and unique ways of doing it. What we're talking about, so that your audience is aware, we're talking about a project that Ruthann Aramartefio and my shows under Here Be Monster, not my shows, I've got other people there, but, you know, Here Be Monster, and then blogs that we've done, and e-zines and news disseminating centers like Worldwide Hippies. We're all getting together and creating this now, in AWOP Radio with Kim G Publisher, we're creating a network called the Commons Project Network, right?
Yes.
It's TCPN.
Yes.
We are going to invite, we're getting it up and running, and what we want to do is invite Sirius, not just any old body, but, or, not, you can't just say, oh, I want to create a blog and go over there. No,
right.
What we want to do is provide an anchor of dissemination, of further dissemination, create a network that people can come to and begin to understand they're going to find this information, this kind of information coming from this one place. And so we're really anxious to invite those folks that have been working hard to put their voices out there, or who have been doing it and need help refining their techniques or how they're presenting as far as modalities, whether it's a blog or it's a YouTube or, you know, and not content, but production and establishing, you know, networking skills and that kind of thing. And that's what we really want to do over there.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And hey, we got it started in 2013. it's more of this shift because it's stretching us. At least it's sure stretching me. And that's wonderful because I like that. I like mental challenge and the whole thing. But I like what we're doing. And it's just a win-win.
It is. We're reaching out, and I know that, like a bear, Pinko the bear is part of this.
Right.
And he's been silent. He's been silent for quite a while. I think he's going to begin to do a weekly or biweekly show.
Yeah.
He does this extraordinary stream of consciousness radio work, and I think he's pretty damn talented. And he's, of course, you know, a wonderful Pinko the Bear. He's a socialist. He's very union-oriented and very anti-capitalism. And then we have Jack Jodell, who is my co-host on the Sunday show over here, Be Monsters, part of our blog at Roundtree 7, which is also now got Ruth Ann Amartafeo posting on Palestine and other issues over there at Roundtree 7. And Jack is just, he's a real dyed-in-the-wool, liberal Democrat, hopeful, progressive fellow who's still trying to hold on to the good game, but understanding that it requires speaking truth to power because it's so corrupt. But you know, we're building bridges too.
Yes.
And Worldwide Hippies is there, and I think you're going to be doing videos with Joe over at Worldwide Hippies.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing get this the sex one, bedrooms and beyond.
Oh, okay. Well, that's wow, hoochie coo. Okay,
well, it'll be fun, but it'll be like, true facts. It's all based on real truth about sex. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. He got more balls than I do, Lenny. More ovaries than I got.
No, it's just like a really fun project.
It sounds like it's going to be a great. It's going to be a really good content. You know, really good content. And Worldwide Hippies has several video blogs.
Yeah.
They have another gal doing a once every couple of weeks or something, something kind of workshop. And then, of course, as the cookie crumbles with Doc Woody. And Trisha is going to be re-upping her video commentary on small subjects and issues with Worldwide Hippies and Roundtree 7. So it'll be going out. All of this will be going out over the Commons Project Network.
Right.
We should mention that I'm very anxious to bring Rick Spizek and Progressive News Network in, and
we have several people who are pretty much lined up. As soon as we get spread out a little bit from the foundational business. Now the website and different things. There's some other radio stations anyway that I know want to come in that we want also. So no, I think it's just very, very interesting what we're doing. And because, well, it's one of those things we're joining this and we're advertising, for want of a better word, for each other. And you know, so
we're creating a community and supporting one another on what is actually the consciousness of the planet, the internet.
That's it. And that's what I wanted to say, that just because several of us happen to be socialists and so far left that we've already dropped off. That doesn't mean that everyone is. We have people who are more conservative, and that's fine because they also want to, you know, change the paradigm of what people
get
for news. We know that mainstream media, also known as lamestream media, is flawed. So flawed beyond fixing. And so that's where we are all coming in.
Mm-hmm. Well, they consider news a product. And I, you know, it's like we're speaking on the show on Here Be Monsters last Sunday with Joe McAvoy, who is the founder of Worldwide Hippies. He worked for the Des Moines Chronicle in Rochester, which is a Gannett paper, and I worked for the Sun Sentinel down here, which is a Gannett paper. I worked as a graveyard shift photographer out of school. I did a lot of note-taking for the political writer in Broward County, who ended up becoming head of the political bureau in Tallahassee for the paper. But I didn't have the, you know, discipline to pay the dues, as they say. And then I also worked on a weekly in upstate, up in the mountains of Appalachia in Avery County, North Carolina, with the greatest editor I've ever known in my life, who now owns and runs a little authentic weekly in Avery County of her own. News, it was any place I, even when I was working at the Sun Sentinel, there were a lot of people I worked with, like editors that have since left because the news became a product. Terrific editor and writer down here, Taya Wolf, she just said, forget about it.
Well, that's sad, because like you, these are the people who really cared and who were actually reporting news, not trying to create it and then lie about it, but I mean people who were reporting what was going on, and that's what we don't have in mainstream media anymore.
Well, we do to a certain degree in network news, to a certain degree, but everything is bled into it.
Well,
people are so cabled out now.
Yeah.
That they turn to, if they want what they think is, I'll tell you where the real, any real journalism on broadcast is left, is locally. That's where the sustainable is, you know, local.
Yeah.
Local news, they are asking the who, what, where, when, and why. Anywhere else, it's, you know, there's a lot of commentary and a lot of, corporate profit.
I live in a small town, and there's really not. Well, there was a radio station, but it's not truly. Well, part of it's local. They have an online auction on Saturdays. It's local. I mean, you know, it's one of those. It's a farm town. But Gwen, we have 2 minutes left. I want to thank you. I want to thank Raymond Blaine of Palestine and Sarit Jacobson, who had guest. Guy Batavia from Israel, who is a pro-Palestinian activist, which is hard to be an Israeli and a pro-Palestinian activist. I don't know if you heard him talking. You know, he's been beat up and he's threatened all the time.
I heard some of that,
Incredible. Right. And then we had Omo, who is in Cyprus right now studying, but he is from Nigeria, and he's going to be on every week with a little bit of news from Africa, and Blaine and Sarit are going to. Yeah, well, you know, hey. And Blaine,
where do you find these folks?
Everywhere. Well, yeah, he's from Nigeria. You know, my ex-husband is Ghanaian, and we used to have a lot of Nigerians at the house we had after hours parties and all this. So, I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the West African area. But. Yeah. So we're just, just branching out here. But I want to thank them, and thank you so much, Gwen, for coming in, because I know you're busy. We just talked about all the things you're doing.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much. I really do. And I want to wish everybody a very happy equinoxial
balance. Go plant a seed. Just because you'll be amazed. You take care of this little seed and watch what happens. Watch the growth from a tiny little seed. True. You know, and that's the way we grow. So, good night, everyone. Happy Easter. Happy Altara. Thank you, Anna.
Good night, Ra.